Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the Good Shepherd. A good shepherd protects, directs, provides, and cares for his sheep. Jesus laid down his life for his sheep. No one can snatch them out of his hand. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
There's only one ultimate solution, but there are some things we could do. This is Wretched Radio. Hey, careful watching the Masterpiece Theater TV. We get BBC stuff in our cable system because we dig foreign stuff. Because even if a movie is mediocre, it's like, oh, cool. I felt like I've been to Tuscany or Poland or wherever the movie. We'll even read the subtitles and watch the movie in a foreign language because it just feels like a cultural experience. So we got the Masterpiece Theater thing, BBC, whatever the channel is. This was Masterpiece Theater. This was on PBS. It was Marie Antoinette. And we thought, cool. And we looked at the picture of the thumbnail that they gave you. And it's like, oh, wow, it looks like they spent a lot of money. This should be really good. A historical drama. There couldn't possibly be any filthy images or dirty deeds done in a Marie Antoinette movie. I think the thing said 12 plus. And within minutes, it's like, where's the clicker? Get this thing off of it. And it wasn't subtle what they were doing. It was like, what? 12 plus? Are you kidding me? And that's BBC Masterpiece Theater. What I'm trying to say is we are awash in pornography in our Western civilization. I shouldn't say that. It's global. Why? Because people's sexual drives so often override their any semblance of morality. And they're willing to look at these images like peeping toms. There was an article that I just read. I didn't mark it up and bring it in. But the title was something like, the church needs to get over its obsession with Hollywood, that we're willing to watch people do the deeds that we would denounce. We're willing to let people say the words that you and I would call blasphemy, and we consume it as if it's not really happening. And I think one of the points in this particular article was that we don't think that it's just acting. Well, no, somebody's actually saying it. There's really a person there. And even if it's just an actor, it's still sinfulness is being portrayed. It's sort of like, and I've been reading about this too. This whole subject is so tawdry. AI porn. That it's not even real. The proliferation of that, apparently it's exploded on the internet and it's porn via AI. So it's not real humans, but it's porn. So you can say, well, it's not real people. Nobody's getting hurt. Well, first of all, somebody's making that trash. You're being hurt by it, but that's not the big issue. Remember, the big issue is not the damage that it does. The big issue is what it is. And a violation of God's standard for human flourishing, for what is best for us. He knows it's terrible. God isn't reading The Guardian and The New York Times and going, oh, pornography, it's had a really bad effect. Ooh, that's not a good thing. He knows that. Why? Because he only prescribes that which is good for us. One man, one woman, lifelong covenantal relationship. That's what's best for you. You want human flourishing? And incidentally, over and over again, we read that those couples that participate in God's program, happier in every room in the house. Why? Because God's ways are better ways. And we as a society have chosen low ways, tawdry ways. Yeah, they're damaging ways, but they're sinful ways. And I was given this some thought. Now, this is not the solution, but I think one of the contributing factors to the stunning amount of pornography that's downloaded and consumed by young men, I think it's related to marriage. I think it's related to when people are getting married. just to return to math for a moment, if some dude has been watching porn since he's 10, now he's 20, he's 10 years into it, most likely has lost interest in human relationships because that's what porn does to a man. It desensitizes. The preference is to be alone than to be with a woman. That's what it does to you. 10 years of that. Then they're 25. 15 years of that. I think the average age of getting married now, are we in our 40s yet, Jimmy? Are we at 30 yet?
We might be.
Might be. Yes, the AI machine. I bet we're close to 30, if not over it already. So these guys have been looking at porn for 20 years. And now they're being brought under the same roof to love, honor, and cherish a woman, to play the role of Jesus Christ, and to be giving as opposed to taking in every regard. You think that's going to work out for them? They don't want it. That's too hard. Porn is easy. It demands nothing. Marriage does. No, marriage is more rewarding in every regard, but it demands a lot. It demands that you basically die to self and you play your role as Jesus or the church. By the way, to help you do that, Brad Bigney's podcast, it is called Thrive. You won't do better when it comes to helping your marriage be all that it should be. It is an awesome podcast. You can find it wherever your podcast. It's Thrive with Brad Bigney. Men who are wired, totally rewired in the worst possible ways because of pornography, they don't want marriage. And I would suggest, as a society and as the church, we start promoting marriage younger than older. Jimmy, what'd you come up with on the AI machine?
All right. So as of last year, the average age in the U.S. that men get married, 30.2, and women, 28.6.
Boy, that's...
Contrast that with 1960. The average age for men getting married was 22.8,
yep,
and women 20.3.
From John Stone Street, this was most likely a Breakpoint article, but it was reprinted in Christian Post. Popular wisdom on early marriages is mostly wrong. There's skepticism about young marriage. This is from John Stone Street, and it's propped up by a whole host of false assumptions. It leads to higher rates of divorce. Young adults need to establish a career first, or they should be financially independent before seeking a spouse. And so well-meaning people drop nuggets of popular wisdom like, there's no rush. You got your whole life ahead of you. Well, at 30, you don't. In fact, you're getting close to about half of your life being gone. You should find yourself before settling down. Or, of course, you need to experiment sexually before you commit to just one person. That's the wisdom of the world right there. And John Stone Street, number of surveys revealing all of that is wrong. That it is good. It's actually better to get married younger. Now, as a society, we can determine what that younger is. But please remember that these norms that we have created for what 18 is an adult, that is not the way we've always viewed it. If you go back to Bible days, people got married at a very young, like early teens. Why? Well, because they were capable of making a family and staying alive. Why? Because their society was such that it demanded hard work out of the womb. That's just what you do. You have to get on. Survival is a big thing, and doing it with somebody is a whole lot easier than doing it by themselves. And so they got together early. And I think also a part of this is sexual drive. It kicks in and it's increasingly early. Whatever is in the water, RFK should be doing some studies on that. Why these kids are beginning puberty at such a young age. It's going down and down and down. So I'm not suggesting we return to Bible days, but I am saying 30 and 28? Back to John Stone Street. Research from the National Marriage Project at the University of Virginia showed there's no significant difference in reported marital satisfaction or divorce rates between earlier marriages. Huh? What do you know? It's a lie that they tend to get divorced more. Later marriages are considered after 25. Younger marriages are 20 to 24. By several important measures, earlier marriages have an advantage over those begun in the late 20s or beyond. Oh, you don't say. A study found spouses who married earlier reported higher rates of, and this is the list in the order that it's presented, sexual satisfaction. What do you know? They don't have a decade of dirty images and just baked into their brains. They've been doing that together. Earlier marriages appear to have long-term financial benefits. Married men earn more. Even when controlling for household size and education, married men have 40% more household income than their unmarried peers and are half as likely to live in poverty. Some suggesting it's because the responsibility norms associated with marriage mean that married men work harder, smarter, and more responsibly. In other words, it grows you up and it demands things of you. And guess what? Then those desires and urges can be satisfied rightly with your one woman. And then this article also goes on to say that earlier marriages, it's a good idea because they build their lives, their finances, their dreams together, triumphs, failures, because marriage is the foundation of their life. Instead of uni being the cornerstone, instead of having so much money in the bank being the cornerstone, how's about this? Marriage is the cornerstone. Aim for that, dude. Get on it. You'll be glad you did. And so will the rest of society. This is Wretched Radio.
Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know, a dollar today doesn't go near as far as it used to. It might buy you a soft drink. But what if your dollars could multiply? For 25 years, our gospel partners have been watching their giving multiply. Every month, their faithful support transforms into college campus evangelism, biblical counseling, marriage restoration, and gospel proclamation across the globe. And when you become an ongoing monthly gospel partner, understand this. You're not just giving money. You're preaching the gospel to a student at Georgia Tech. You're discipling the young man struggling with pornography. And you're equipping a pastor in a small rural church. And the work, it's nowhere near finished. The fields are white for harvest, and your monthly partnership makes it all possible. Join us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner right now by visiting FortisInstitute.org. That's FortisInstitute.org, because when faithful people give faithfully, the gospel advances powerfully. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel. Marriage, parenting, mental health, cultural engagement. The challenges facing today's Christians aren't getting any simpler. But at Fortis Institute, we believe God's Word provides the clarity you need. That's why we brought together some of Christianity's most trusted voices under one roof. If you want practical marriage wisdom, Brad Bickney's Thrive podcast delivers biblical solutions that work. If you're struggling with anxiety or depression, Greg Gifford's Transformed brings biblical counseling straight to your ears. And if you're looking for authentic manhood, Adam Tyson's Way of Manhood cuts through the cultural noise. Plus, get daily insights from our team of fellows, including exclusive Gary Varvel cartoons that'll make your day. This isn't just another ministry. It's your daily source for biblical strength and wisdom. And if you want to stay informed about private events and exclusive content, become a Fortis Insider today, all at FortisInstitute.org. Fortis Institute, because standing firm doesn't mean standing alone. You've most likely been there, sitting across from a therapist, staring at their degrees on the wall, listening while they give you a diagnosis and tell you what pill and prescription they think are going to cure all your ills. You walk out of the office carrying a label, and you wonder why you feel even heavier than you did before you walked in. That's why Dr. Greg Gifford wrote Lies My Therapist Told Me, because sometimes it's not the medication or even the diagnosis that's the real issue. It's that the whole system doesn't touch what's going on beneath the surface. Look, not every struggle is solved with a pill. Not every label tells the entire story. What if addiction's not just a disease? What if your anxiety is not just a chemical imbalance? And what if the diagnosis handed to your child is not the final word? The world gives its answers, but rarely does it ever deal with the heart. Scripture does. Order Lies My Therapist Told Me today at FortisInstitute.org/lies. That's FortisInstitute.org/lies.
Names of God. We learn a lot about God from the names given to Him in Scripture. One name is Jehovah Rohi. The Lord is my shepherd. A good shepherd protects, directs, provides, and cares for his sheep. Jesus called himself the good shepherd, who lays his life down for his sheep. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Did I say capstone or cornerstone? This is Wretched Radio. I may have slipped a biblical word in place of a secular term. Capstone, that's the thing you got to achieve. That's the ideal, man. You've got to get that, and then your identity is secure and your reputation is solid because you've achieved the capstone. I think I was saying cornerstone, which, of course, we all know, first of all, isn't Peter, it's Jesus. That's a different word than capstone, and these capstones are created by society. Who determines what is the thing that we are supposed to achieve so that we can be esteemed well in the eyes of our culture? And the answer is our culture. We do. And those capstones over the years have changed. Why? Because they used to be more biblically informed. The Bible used to set the capstone here, and in every regard, by the way. Capstone in Christianity, probably another word for sanctification. God determines, this is what's beautiful. He's not knocked out by externals. He loves the internals, a quiet and gentle spirit. Those are the things that God delights in. And he's not knocked out by looks. The world is. They make looks the capstone. God says, no, I'm looking at your character. I'm looking at who you are on the inside. I'm looking at your heart. God is the one who makes these decisions. What does it mean to be a success? Well, today it would be that you're making lots of money and you're providing a lot for your spouse and for your kids. Is that God's definition of making it? The answer is absolutely not. Are we responsible to provide for our families? We most certainly are, but that's not the capstone. He wants godly men who love, cherish, protect, defend, and nurture their wives and children and lead them to love Jesus more. That's a man. Our world is not the pace setter. At least it shouldn't be. And marriage used to be the capstone. You got married. That's the big thing. Not that you go to university and then you get your master's degree. Oh, you got your doctorate. Well, you've really capstoned. Or you're a doctor. Ooh, now look, I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with pursuing those things. Although I'm really a big fan of the trades. I think Fox was just doing a report on the trades and the number of Gen Zers that are going, yeah, I'll take that. They don't want to go to university. They can't stand the indoctrination. They don't like the idea of the massive debt. They don't like having to spend 2 years studying stuff they have zero interest in so that they can then finally get to what they think is going to be their major, although that changes 16 times. So they're rejecting it and they're going for the trades. And to that I say, awesome. There again is another societal peer pressure. What's the better route? The trades or university? I will tell you. Even now, mostly people would say university, but people are starting to wake up and go, wait a second. You mean you can be safe from AI in the trades? That isn't such a bad thing after all. The culture, it exerts a lot of pressure on us to determine what we're supposed to be and what we're supposed to pursue. Now, just as a nota bene, please remember there's Christian liberty in all these things. So I'm not suggesting this is what you got to do. I'm just saying the Bible needs to inform what we should be doing and what we should be pursuing. And marriage is one of those things. Marriage is a good thing. And our culture is doing everything to undermine that and to detach, courtesy of second wave feminism, to detach the procreative act with the procreative consequence. Now, third wave feminism, which says that we're detached even from our gender and from our sexuality. Jimmy, I don't know that I mentioned this. I've been musing about this. How culture detaches us from what I call touchstones. Mm-hmm. Okay, what's a touchstone? Family. Family is a touch. You have your family. Even when you're 18, you're out of the nest. It's like, okay, I got to, that's like a safe place for me. That's like, those people love me. They're going to take care of me. And what is the culture doing these days? It's telling the kids, you got to cut yourself off from the parents. And what does that do to the kids? It just leaves them dangling out there. And Jimmy, I think this video that's in the thingy file right now,
yeah,
it's about, okay, we've talked about this 100 times here, the number of kids who are cutting off their parents. So this guy actually makes a video in response to those of us who are critiquing the cutting off of parents.
There's an increase in the number of people cutting off their parents, but there's one thing I've noticed about this trend. Has anybody else noticed that when an adult child chooses not to have a relationship with a parent, it's always, but it's your mom and dad. You only get one mom and dad.
Yep.
Why are you doing that?
Yeah, because they've been indoctrinated to think that their parents are narcissistic, toxic, terrible people who still want to control them and not let them be their authentic self. Are there some stinker parents? Of course there are. But I have seen lovely parents cut off by their kids, and this guy ain't helping.
And it's never, wow, what could a parent have done to cause their child to make this decision but feel like it was the right one?
Here's some of the things that they do. Hey, don't drink and drive. No, you're trying to control me. Hey, I don't know that that's a good person to be spending time with. Oh, you're toxic. That's what I've observed as the trend. Good Christian parents being cut off for very poor reasons. Could there ever be a time for a kid to cut off their parent? Sure. But I would suggest it's the exception, not the rule.
It's never what happened that made a grown adult feel like the need to walk away from the people who raised them.
And let's talk about that.
But they're your children. How can you treat them that way?
Okay. If a child is being abused by parents, we're all over that. Most Christian parents, they're not that. And it's the culture that has informed the kids that these parents are overbearing, narcissistic bullies who want to control you, and you got to cut the parental puppet strings in order to live your authentic self. And it's a horrible trend. And it removes one of those, what I'm calling a touchstone. Church is another one. But I was also, Jimmy, I don't know if I mentioned this, the transgender thing.
Uh-huh.
We were out in public, and there was a boy who was pretending to be a girl, thinking, of course, that he's the gender that he's not. And then I was reading that on the, it was us, in some country, you can change your name 3 times. 3 times. Because you're Sally, then you're Sammy, then you're back to Sarah or whatever you want. So you can change your name. We're cutting people off from the touchstone of their very being, their gender. We're even telling people, you're not even connected to your name anymore. You can change it. It means nothing. A name. It was just imposed upon you by your parents. You can make it whatever you want. And all the strings are getting cut. All of the things that tether us to solid things and to stability, they're being cut. And they're being cut too, by the way, inside of Christendom, when people are saying, hey, Daddy-O, church is wherever you want it to be. And it's just me and Jesus. And I watch John MacArthur on YouTube on Sunday morning. You're getting cut off from a touchstone. Church is good for you. And it grounds people and it helps people to be secure and to feel like, okay, I got a little shalom going on here because I've got my touchstones in place. Snip, snip, snip goes the culture. Cutting them all off, all of them off. And I think we're seeing it, aren't we? We're seeing a society that has totally altered the norms and determined very bad capstones. And the results are in. We don't need to wait another generation. We've got all the statistics that we need to see that anxiety, depression, loneliness, fear, guilt, shame, all of it compounded. Why? Well, because society now determines the capstones. And I think there is a good trend right now that a lot of people are starting to at least recognize that. And then, you know, some of the social influencers, they're starting to see, secularism has not served us well. What did used to serve us well? Oh, Christianity, that's intriguing. And now, unfortunately, too often they look at it as if it's some sort of worldview that can be implemented because it has good effects. That ain't what Christianity is about. Christianity does have good effects, even if you're not a believer, because you're becoming more in alignment with the reality that God has defined and created. But it doesn't make you better. It doesn't really bring a peace that surpasses all understanding. It doesn't bring shalom. It doesn't bring joy. It might bring some happiness to you. You got to become a Christian to really experience the Christian fruit. And our society right now is saying, run as fast and as far away from that Christianity thing as you can. Now, I'm glad that these social influencers are saying we should give Christianity another look, but if they're simply using it as some sort of a crutch or a prop in order to attain a better life, that ain't what Christianity is really about. It's been too long that our society has determined capstones. And I do believe right now people are interested in hearing why Christianity, the Bible, and God himself is the better determiner of what is indeed a capstone. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.